The MMA on the Rocks podcast is intended for adult audiences and does contain some explicit content. So if you are not an adult, please make sure your parents do not know you are listening to this and do not repeat anything you hear on this show in front of them. Also a reminder that even if you fight recklessly, please remember to drink responsibly. Now that we have that out of the way, let's get to the show. Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 244 of the podcast. Are you joining me live on Facebook or YouTube? Today's Sunday, June the 6th. And Jeff the Animal Wilson is supposed to be joining today, but I don't know where he is because he hasn't answered his phone in the last hour. This was the window he said he had available, so I told him to jump on. I sent him the link to join the show, so he may appear and surprise us all, and he may not appear and surprise none of us. In any case, it's summer already, folks, huh? Getting kind of warm out there for the rest of you. I mean, we've been kind of having this weather in Florida for a while now, but a lot of other states complaining about the heat now. It's actually been hotter other places. Like, my parents live in New York, and they were saying how it was like 95 degrees today, while it was, I think, 86 here, high of 88, something like that. So it's kind of nice, like, not being the most miserable state in terms of weather for once. Tonight is Logan Paul against Floyd Mayweather. And I actually had no idea. I heard, I think it was John McCarthy's podcast this week, and they were talking about it. So I knew it was this weekend. I kind of wasn't paying attention. And then I was at the gym yesterday, and a guy at the gym says to me, like, "Hey, is there UFC this weekend?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, you know, Jairzinho Rozenstruik versus Augusto Sakai." And he's like, "Oh, I don't know who those guys are." But then he's like, "Oh, and then Sunday is Logan Paul, Floyd Mayweather." And I was like, "Really? It's on Sunday?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." So therein lies the difference between, like, myself and probably most of you who listen to this show and, you know, the so-called casual viewers who get chastised by you all so much. And I try to always keep that perspective too, you know, not just when I'm talking about MMA on the show, but when I'm talking to people. I realize, you know, most people are not as into it as I am. In fact, I always kind of assume they're not. But yeah, it seems like that's more so what the general public is concerned with. I haven't heard a whole lot of buzz about this one, to be honest. You know, I've heard more about Tyron Woodley against the other Paul brother, than I did about the Mayweather Logan Paul. I'm not gonna watch it. I'm not gonna even find a stream for it. If highlights happen to come my way, I'll take a look. But yeah, I guess it's on Showtime. I really don't know much about it, and I'm pretty deep into this world of combat sports, so I'm treating it as if it's not that important. If I'm way off base here, like, let me know. You guys, like, really want to hear my opinion on it, you know, maybe I'll try to find a clip or something, but I honestly don't give a shit at all. But the reason I bring it up at all is simply because somebody brought it to my attention that it was even taking place this weekend, and I didn't even know it was on Sunday. So, I mean, they didn't even bother trying to compete with the UFC when the UFC had an early card, which was nice. So let's talk about that. UFC Vegas 28, UFC Fight Night 189, you know, however you want to refer to it, however you're keeping track. If you have a good system, let me know, because it's starting to get confusing for me. the pay-per-views are all numbered differently. The fight nights have two different, you know, if it's in Vegas, it's one number, and but then there's the numbers for keeping track of everything. But I don't know, man. I'm not good with numbers. So this was a good card, I thought. It was on early, which I loved, but then I wound up being busy yesterday. So I wound up tuning in like right around the co-main event. And then I had to go back. I went back and I watched the entire card, and I still got to go to bed like fairly early, cause I was able to skip the commercials and stuff, but I thought it was a good card. I thought there was a lot of good fights on here. I thought both of the heavyweight fights delivered, you know, two first round knockouts in your co-main and main event. Like, how can you complain about that? I mean, that's something that's rare. I mean, you kind of expect it when it's two heavyweight fights, but you know, it doesn't necessarily have to go that way. Let me take these headphones off because I don't have anybody else to listen to right now. And it's kind of hot in here, so my air conditioning is broken, which explains the ladder behind me. Anyway, that's a whole other podcast I could dedicate to just like things, shit that goes wrong. We'll call it. Shit went wrong for Augusto Sakai last night. So Rozenstruik, to me, and I've been telling you about Rozenstruik, for those of you long-term listeners, you know, been telling you about his kickboxing background, been telling you to keep an eye on him in this heavyweight division. I've been high on this guy since his UFC debut, and I will continue to do so. I think he's got one of the scariest looks. You know, everybody talks about Ngannou and like, you know, cause he's so chiseled and muscular and everything. And he just looks like, you know, he could crush your skull into dust. But Rozenstruik, man, he's got these eyes and he's got this expression, this cold expression on his face. That's just, it's just scary, man. Like, he looks at people like, you know, I can knock you out. All I have to do is touch you and I can do it. And like, he believes it, and the people he's looking at believe it too. You know, everybody except Francis Ngannou, who, you know, just swarmed him, and Cyril Gane, who kind of did the opposite and stayed on the outside and outpointed him. This guy is ferocious, man. And he's just, I'm so impressed with him. And even the way he landed this knockout, he had like a leaping left hook, left himself wide open, which is like so far from proper technique, and not the way you're supposed to be able to generate power, by the way. He started it off with a brutal punch to the body and then leaps in for this left hook, follows it up with the straight, and puts Sakai down, and then hits him twice more. And then the guy's just like on the ground, gushing blood, you know, from those follow-up strikes on the ground. This was just vicious. It was like, it was cold-blooded. It was heartless. It was ferocious. And it was everything you could want to see it in a main event, especially because the knockout came at 4:59 of the first round. If you guys chose to skip this card, like, I get it. Like, this card didn't have as much star power on it. And you know, if you wanted to do something this weekend, it was on early. You want to save, you know, your MMA viewing for next weekend. You know, I understand. I was not thrilled about this card on paper, but man, that main event was worth watching it on in itself. You know, that finish from Rozenstruik. And you could tell right away that Sakai did not want to engage with him. He felt something from Rozenstruik early, and he was on his bicycle. He was backing up. He was trying to score points, but like not really trying to engage. And I can't blame him. Like, if you get touched by this guy, you know, it probably, like, I don't know how many of you listening have ever, you know, been rocked or gotten your bell rung or anything. It feels like kind of like getting electrocuted and like everything kind of shakes around you. And then it feels like you're dizzy for a little bit. And it sucks. And when you feel that, you're like, oh shit, I need to get my bearings. I don't want to feel that shit again. And it may not have been obvious to us. You know, it could have just been a glancing shot that did it, but something made Sakai not want to engage the rest of that round. And then I think he thought he was going to get through it, but then Biggie Boy heard them wooden paddles clapping and he was like, nah, man, it's time to end this. And he just lunged at Sakai and put him down in 9 seconds. Like from the time the clappers went off till 9 seconds later, he decided he was going to end that fight. And that's what he did. And that's why this guy is just so impressive to me. And it's a problem because, you know, Ngannou's the champ. Ngannou knocked him out in 38, 39 seconds, whatever it was when those two fought. And then you've got, you know, Derek Lewis, who's in line for the title. You've got, you know, John Jones doing whatever John Jones is doing, thinking he's going to insert himself in the heavyweight picture. Maybe now, maybe a year from now, maybe he's going to start a business in the meantime or do something else. I don't know what John Jones is up to. I can't really waste my time trying to figure it out. And then you got Stipe, who obviously deserves the rubber match with Ngannou. And then you got, you know, you've got some of these younger heavyweights on their way up quick. You know, Ciryl Gane has a win over Rozenstruik. So it's like the matchmaking gets a little bit tricky here. I mean, maybe you throw Rozenstruik and Marcin Tybura in there together. Tybura coming up with a big first round knockout himself. Timeline makes sense. I think that's a great fight if they haven't fought already. Let me take a look at this. But Rozenstruik, man, it's just, it's the confidence that is what really scary about him. Like if you think about the Overeem fight, you know, Overeem was beating his ass for 23 and a half minutes or, you know, 24 and a half minutes. And then, you know, Rozenstruik lands that one big shot that busts Overeem's lip open. And that's it. Like he just decided like, all right, I'm done getting my ass kicked. I'm going to knock you out now. And he never lost that confidence. Like he knew throughout that whole 5 rounds that he had the ability to do that. And then he's just like, all right, it's time. I'm going to split your lip in half. And with Sakai, it's like, all right, it's time. I'm going to turn your face into a blood fountain. Like that's scary. Everybody talks about how scary Ngannou is, but man, Rozenstruik, like he may not have as impressive of a physique, but it's just the look, man. He just looks. I want to see that fight again. I want to see Rozenstruik and Ngannou, and I want to see a little bit more. I'm not saying I think Rozenstruik can beat Ngannou, but I'm saying like I would like to see a little more back and forth between those two, and I think it would be fun. But I don't know if we're gonna have an opportunity to see that because you know the heavyweight picture is so kind of murky right now. But man, try convincing me that he's not worthy of it, of a title shot and of getting back in there with Ngannou, getting another crack at him. You know, I know he's coming off the loss to Ciryl Gane, but nobody remembers that. You know, nobody's going to like, if you show the highlight reel of what Rozenstruik just did to Sakai, like anybody on the street's like, oh yeah, that guy should be the champion probably. And then show them the highlight reels of Ngannou and everything he's done. And everybody would be like, oh yeah. Oh, what? Those two have fought before. Oh yeah. I would watch that. You know, maybe it's just me. Let me know if I'm way off base here, guys. Well, the co-main event, your heart has to break for Walt Harris, man. Nobody should have to go through what he went through with his daughter. And I'm really glad to see that he found a vehicle to cope with it in, you know, staying in high level mixed martial arts and staying competitive. But now it's been two losses in a row, and I'm not going to say like everything that happened in his personal life is what's causing this. I think it's just, you know, he's a very talented, very explosive guy who was kind of figuring things out as he went. And then, you know, he's in a shallow division. So then all of a sudden, you know, he's in there with guys that are super durable. And it seems to be the weakness for Walt Harris is guys that are durable, you know, Tabura, Volkov, Overeem. So it's actually three losses in a row. You know, if he can't get you out of there in the first round, like he was doing early on in his career, you know, with the first round knockouts and everything like that, the 12-second knockout of Olenek. It's like once you kind of weather the storm, then that's kind of the recipe. Oh, and look who it is. Speaking of recipes, I don't know what the transition
is. Well, this is the interview. What are you doing?
It's only an hour and 12 minutes after I texted you to start the show, Jeff.
Phil, what are you doing? You're starting the show without me? What's going on here?
Jeff, I don't have all day. I got a kid. I got, you know, chores.
Phil, that was your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sorry,
don't
Bill.
Remind me.
I had to help my dad with some stuff. So I jumped, but as soon as
that was your choice.
Yeah, it was. That it was.
You know, but, I was thinking about this, Jeff, because I was vacuuming the house earlier. And when I was a kid, my dad used to take the vacuum out and just vacuum for like an hour. And like nobody would talk to him because you'd just be vacuuming. And you don't want to talk to somebody while the vacuum's going. And I just always thought like we had a shitty vacuum, you know. But now I get it. Like,
yeah, it was the only me time your dad had.
It's like you turn on the vacuum and you're like doing something. You're being productive and it's noisy. So like people don't talk to you and you're like, shit, nobody's bothering me. Like my like Ariana doesn't want to come. Like, I guess she's a little scared of the vacuum or whatever. I'm like, man, this rug, I don't think the dust is coming out of it. I better just keep going over this one spot until I, you know, find a purpose for existing again.
Yeah, Bill, that's how my dad is with the bathroom. And at first I thought he was just, you know, I thought he just had some cloggage in the pipes, but it turns out that's the only time he gets to himself.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you think your dad has like an anchor knot in his colon, and it turns out it's just like, you know, there's peace and quiet in there. And in those days there wasn't even cell phones. They would just read a whole novel, and then even if it wasn't a good one, it could be like one of those ones with Fabio on the cover.
Oh, man.
Like I already read this one twice, but once I open that door, I got to deal with my family.
Yeah, man.
Anyway, and then Claudia actually got me early Father's Day gift, a leaf vacuum for the backyard. So that opens up a whole new window of opportunities.
Bill, I don't understand those things. They don't do anything. They just put leaves in another location. They don't scoop them up or nothing.
No, that you're thinking of a leaf blower. This is an actual leaf vacuum where it sucks the leaves up, and then it's got a rotary blade inside, and it turns them into dust.
Nice. Definitely something to keep away from the baby.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't let her stick her face in it or anything. But I mean, the blade is pretty far up there. Like, she'd have to really try. So, but there's that, because you know the issues I have with all the leaves and the fucking pine needles in my yard. This is like what dad life comes down to. Or just like spend most of my free time cursing the pine trees. I'm like, motherfucker, can you hold on to these needles a little longer? Like, there's sap everywhere. You're sticky as fuck. Why can't you hold on to these needles? Why are you gonna drip them all over my yard?
Yeah, man. Bill, I mean, I don't think the audience knows this, but behind your house is just, it's just green. It's like the Amazon back there.
Yeah.
I don't think your town could build something there if they tried. I mean, the amount of resources it would take to just clear all the bush would be, you'd be looking at 12 years of taxes.
Yeah, easily. I mean, luckily, the land right next to my house can't be developed on because there's utility lines running through it. So the downside is that my neighbors, instead of having human neighbors, which I would hate, I have mosquitoes that live in the woods that I am at war with, like constantly trying to murder. But at least I can actually, you know, try to kill them, unlike the human neighbors where, like, you kind of just have to live with them and, like, you know, hope you have a really fast garage door opener so you can get in and out of the house quick without interacting with human beings.
Oh, that's fair. Bill, speaking of taking people out, man, Bill, Rosenstrike didn't seem to have a problem yesterday doing the like to Sakai. I mean, I know you've already gone over this, but man, Bill, I thought this would be like a longer fight, so I went to the bathroom really fast.
And then
I came back and Sakai's looking at the lights and Rosenstrike's, you know, talking to his core. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah. He had that one guy with the white beard.
Yeah.
It looked so cool. But he looked like did you ever see Mr. Deeds?
Dude, I love that movie.
He looked like Cecil from Mr. Deeds.
Yeah, okay. I could see that.
I was like, oh shit, he's got Cecil in his corner.
Yeah, but Cecil was the cool one at the end. So
yeah, he wound up being a good dude. So I guess he's a good guy to have in your corner. But I was just talking about how scary Rosenstrike is and like how everybody talks about how scary Ngannou is and like, you know, he's got bigger muscles and everything, but Rosenstrike just has that dead look in his eyes. Like he's just going to kill whatever's in front of him. And like, you know, Ngannou has the great story, the backstory and everything. And he's humble and he works with kids, all this stuff. And Rosenstrike is just like, he's got that serial killer stare, man. It's just like, you almost be worried what would happen if a referee wasn't around. You know, like he just got that level of scariness to him.
Yeah, dude, for sure. And I agree. It's a good thing he has an outlet in the UFC. It'd be a little scary to have somebody like that just walk around with no way to let out his pent up rage.
Yeah, right.
But Bill, yeah, for sure. And the thing with Rosenstrike is there's no plan B. Like this is it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is very exciting to watch. Good to see him back in the win column. You know, I wasn't super excited to have this fight in particular as the main event, just because, like last week, we said both fighters coming off of losses. But Bill, overall, this card was really, really entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was making that same point just earlier, and then I had gotten into the Tabora Walt Harris card and. All I had really said about it was that, you know, again, Walt Harris's weakness seems to be guys who can weather that storm through the beginning of the first round, you know, avoid that crazy knockout power. And then, you know, he just kind of wilts in there with the more experienced, more durable guys, you know, your Overeems and your Volkovs and your, now your Taboras, you know, the ground, you know, once Tabora got him on the ground, it was just like, you know, flat on his back, hips on the ground. It's like, you know, you got to show a little something, like show a little urgency to get back to your feet. If that's plan A through Z is to knock the guy out, like you got to be on your feet to do it. But it's unfortunate for Walt because of, you know, the tragedy that he's had to live through and that he continues to live through. But I don't associate, you know, the losses with that. I'm sure he's doing everything in his power. I think he just, you know, came up quick in a shallow division. And, you know, the more experienced guys are his kryptonite. Give me your thoughts, Jeff.
Yeah, Bill, hard to argue with that, man. I love Walt Harris. You know, it's awful what his family's going through. But Walt Harris himself, you know, very skilled on the feet. The problem is, like you said, he unloads that tank. He empties that tank halfway through the first round. And then that's it. You know, the plan goes out the window after that. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, he we've seen his grappling exposed a little bit here. And in his, not so much in his fight with Overeem, but Overeem as well was kind of able to get around him, get him on the floor, and then, you know, unload from there. Mm-hmm. So, I'd like to see Walt Harris just go back to the drawing board a little bit, work on that grappling, and even if it's not wrestling for the sake of wrestling, to at least use wrestling in reverse, which we talk about quite often on the show, because a lot of the high level strikers who can at least keep the fight standing on their terms, they find a lot of success with that, even if it's not taking somebody down necessarily.
Yeah. And I think that Walt could have that kind of like long-term power. Like, he's got it in his back pocket. If he could just figure a way to conserve a little bit, you know, like Rozenstruik does, like Derek Lewis does, because those guys have that crazy knockout power in the first round, but they also have it in the fifth round. You know, we saw that with Rozenstruik when he split Overeem's face open. We saw it with Derek Lewis when he did it to Volkov. Whatever those guys are doing to kind of conserve that power and make it last a little bit longer, you know, Walt Harris just needs to connect the dots on those things. But, I mean, let's give the credit to Bora here, who, you know, was not only able to weather the storm, but able to, you know, get an impressive first round finish. You know, usually Walt Harris needs a little bit more time to break down, but, you know, Tabora did a good job. He's so heavy on top. It was uncomfortable just watching. Like, oh man, I would not enjoy having that guy on top of me, like elbowing me in the side of the head. So yeah, big credit to Tabora there.
Yeah, for sure. Tabora using, you know, his skills to his advantage. And I felt like that was the biggest thing, Bill, for me, is I love Walt Harris, but I feel like he's always at either a height or a reach disadvantage with some of these guys at the top who are, mm-hmm. you know, they're massive dudes. You know, I remember being in person for a heavyweight fight a couple of years back when they did one at the Barclays Arena in New York. And Bill, some of those heavyweights, when they're standing in the middle of the cage, their eyes are over the top of the cage, man. Mm-hmm. So Walt Harris, you know, I love the guy, but he's that, it's a considerable advantage to have.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, unless you're Daniel Cormier, there's not a lot of guys under 6 foot that are having success. I don't even know how tall Walt Harris is. Someone else I think that about is Rozenstruik. Like, I feel like he looks a lot smaller than a lot of these guys, and they have him listed at 6'4". There's no way he's 6'4", because like there's been a few guys that like tower over him, and these guys aren't, you know, 6'13". Like, so he's got to be like 6'1". I would think, like, the way, unless these guys are, you know, a lot taller than you would think they are. But in any case, for the sake of time, let's keep rolling through here. Roman Dolidze and Laureano Staropoli, unanimous decision for the Georgian Dolidze. I don't know what was going on here with these two, because I had the volume off while I was watching, but apparently Dolidze was just like laughing at Staropoli a lot, and there was like a lot of shit talk going on, and then they were mad at each other at the end. Did you have the commentary on, Jeff? Did you know what was going on there?
I did, but I'll be honest with you, Bill, I was a little in and out with this fight. The first few rounds was just Dolidze gripping Staropoli. He had his hands around his waist, he had the gable grip, and Staropoli just couldn't for some reason couldn't get out of that position. Mm. And, you know, Staropoli looked frustrated in his face, but his body language wasn't trying to better the position. I'll be honest with you, Bill. Following the Ponzinibbio Baeza fight, this fight just didn't do it for me. Like, the first two rounds was just Dalidze with his arms around Staropoli. I got nothing for you on this one.
It's funny because for me, the Ponzinibbio Baeza fight was the last fight I watched because I put the card on during the Dalidze Staropoli fight and I watched till the end. And then I started from the beginning and watched up to. So for me, Ponzinibbio and Baeza was kind of the main event. So it worked out great. But you and I both, I think, chose this as we're both talking about this as a sleeper fight last week. And man, it fucking delivered. It looked like it was going to be like a bad night for Ponzinibbio. Like he was going to get his ass whipped by this undefeated young kid who came out of nowhere. Like, what's he even doing in there with Ponzinibbio, who was ranked like number six almost, it seems like, yesterday? You know, why does this kid get a shot at him, at a guy that's ranked so high? And then it's like, oh shit, he's whipping the shit out of him. And then here came the problem that Baeza wasn't ready for. You know, he's used to doing that to people and they break, and he's able to, you know, just continue whipping their ass in the same way for the rest of the fight and kind of getting his way. I'm sure, you know, I don't know what his training is like, but I'm sure it happens a lot in the gym. You know, he's getting his way a lot. And you see this a lot with younger fighters that are really good, really naturally gifted. But once things stop going their way, it kind of like, it's hard for them to recover. And this is where the experience comes in, only having 10 MMA fights, because when you pull out all your best weapons, you blast the guy's calf and take his lead leg away. You jab him in the face until he's all bloody. You work him to the body to knock the wind out of him. And the guy's still coming at you, and not only still coming at you, but hurting you back. You know, that's a hard mental hurdle to overcome. You know, when you have a guy, especially a guy as dangerous as Ponzinibbio, where you throw everything at him and he's still like, yeah, I'm still here, kid. You could kind of see that changing of the momentum somewhere in the second round, which is why rounds two and three probably went to Ponzinibbio, according to the judges. It was a close fight. You know, Baeza was in there and he was controlling, you know, all of the first round, some of the second round, and then it just got away from him because he wasn't prepared to have that be met with that pressure after whipping a dude's ass for 6 minutes. But give me your thoughts on this one, Jeff.
Yeah, man, huge credit to Ponzinibbio, dude. You know, he wasn't going to allow Baeza to take this from him. And like you said, overcame that first round, Bill. I was really concerned after that first round because you could see that Ponzinibbio's momentum, I mean, his movement had been compromised, dragging that lead leg, man. You know, his heel was not coming off the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, he was sliding towards Baeza in that second round. And like you said, man, just able to deal with that pressure. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, to picture, you know, what Baez is thinking, because, you know, he's thrown everything but the kitchen sink at this guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his best offense hasn't worked. Probably plans B and C haven't worked because, you know, despite having a little bit of a height advantage, or maybe even a little bit of a reach advantage, I have to go back and look at what the reach was. But, you know, Ponzinibbio was going right through that guard, landing some huge shots to the body and head, and Baeza just wasn't ready for it. Like you said, this was probably one of the first times in his UFC career, at least, where somebody overcame the adversity that he could throw at them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reverse didn't happen. But man, what a fight.
Yeah. And a lot of people would have been broken after that first round. And here's the difference between, you know, inexperienced fighters and elite level fighters like Santiago Ponzinibbio. The inexperienced fighter will be like, ah, fuck my leg. And the experienced fighter will say, ah, fuck my leg. I'll fight him with one leg.
And yeah, man.
That's just the mentality of a guy like Ponzinibbio, who's just like, he's like, you know, I'm gonna die in there. And he's a guy that when he says it, you believe him, and he's just not gonna stop. I think it was a good lesson for Baeza. You know, he's got a classic fight on his resume. He's got his first loss out of the way, which was a huge hurdle, and it wasn't like an embarrassing one. Yep. It was, you know, a great fight that, you know, everybody's talking about now. And he has a lot of lessons to learn. I would have liked to see him mix it up a little bit more. You know, once Ponzinibbio started walking through his punches a little bit and attacking, like, take him down, you know, put him on the ground, give him something else to think about, give him something else to worry about. He kind of kept going back to like, well, let me try and kick the calf. But then Ponzinibbio was like, well, I'm going to kick your calf harder. Like, see how you like it. And it, you know, you could tell he got flustered, but, you know, credit to Baeza too. He stayed in there, you know, even with the Terminator coming after him. It's not like he broke either.
Yeah. Yeah, so. For sure. Especially in that third round, dude, it looked like Ponzinibbio had Baeza hurt mm-hmm. in that third round a few times. You know, and the end of that fight, it kind of looked like Ponzinibbio was going to finish Baeza. But man, what a great fight, man. So back and forth. You know, I felt like neither fighter was ever out of this fight. It was great.
Yeah, it was really, really good. I think the decision went the right way. I'll say that. It was close though. You know, that second round was the swing round. That's when the momentum changed, but you know, depending how closely you're paying attention to the clock, did it change at 255 or did it change at, you know, 210? so that would kind of make the difference there. Gregory Rodriguez, unanimous decision over Dusko Todorovic. I don't have much on this one, Jeff, so if you don't either.
Yeah, we can move on a little bit. Good right. fight, just didn't stick out to me.
Very good. Montana De La Rosa, holy shit. Just devastating grappling here. Her wrestling looked so good. She made it look easy, taking Arianne Lipsky, who, you know, is not a walk in the park fight for anybody, but hit her first takedown, you know, at will, and just did not let her up, and then just smashed her in that second round. Dominant performance by Montana here. I was so impressed with her wrestling. I was so impressed with her ground control. And, you know, just busted this chick up for the win.
Yeah, man. Super impressed with De La Rosa. I think Arianne Lipsky is definitely a feather in the cap in this women's flyweight division, man. She's very tough, especially on the feet. So I think De La Rosa, her wrestling, like you said, looked absolutely fantastic. The ground and pound was vicious. Yeah, I mean, this was a five-star performance from De La Rosa.
Yeah, and it makes it interesting now, especially with Tatiana Suarez moving up to this flyweight division. You know, that would be a grappling dream fight right there. That would be really fun to see. You know, obviously Suarez, huge wrestling back pedigree. You know, one of the best in women's MMA. But you know, moving up 10 pounds now. That would be interesting to see. Aliyah Latifi split decision win over Tanner Boser. Apparently this one was a little controversial. I like, to me, it was kind of the same. It was like, when did the momentum change? And you know, how close were you watching the clock? I didn't think this one was like a robbery that Latifi got it. I think maybe Boser did a little bit more on the feet, but he did a lot less on the ground. So I don't really see how this one was like a robbery here. Jeff, how'd you have this one?
Bill, I actually had this one a little bit more for Tanner Boser, but I didn't think it was a big robbery, like you said. I was a little surprised to see that Latifi won it, but at the same time, I was like, you know what? On the ground, he was a lot more productive, but I felt like they could have given it to Boser, but you know, I'm not really upset or anything, but after what I did see, though, I will say this. I think Aliyah Latifi should go back to light heavyweight or try to go to middleweight. I don't think he will be very successful at heavyweight. Like, he just scraped by Tanner Boser, and Tanner Boser is like the tip of the iceberg, man. You know, this heavyweight division, especially at the top, man, the skills run deep, especially on the feet, where you have guys like Overeem who can deal with grapplers. So I don't know if Latifi can make a deep run in this heavyweight division.
Yeah, yeah, it would be weird to see him against some of those bigger guys. And especially, like, not to say he looked bad, but it looked like he was carrying unnecessary weight. And I don't mean like body fat, like even unnecessary muscle. Like, I feel like you don't need to be that muscular on that frame. I think it's just more stress on the joints and everything like that. I would like to see him move back down as well, but you know, he's getting on in years, and I'm sure he doesn't want to like lean out and have a weight cut and everything. He wants to eat good food and still train and still compete. So I imagine he's going to stay at heavyweight. Also took a pretty bad eye poke in that fight. And it was one of many eye pokes on the night. But this one wasn't caught by the ref. So he just kind of had to deal with it and recover. So credit to Latifi on that one. And, you know, Boser looked good, but you know, at the same time, he had that kind of like acceptance of being on the ground. Like, there was no, he wasn't trying to get his back to the cage to wall walk up. He was staying flat on his back. He was just kind of like accepting being on his back. And, you know, that's never a good look. Even if you're beating somebody up on the feet, you know, the judges are going to look at that. Another really bad eye poke came in the Salikov-Trinaldo fight. Salikov took a really bad eye poke. And this was, this was two fights after seeing a fight ended in no contest due to an eye poke. So there was a lot of eye pokes last night. It was like the theme of the night. It was just like, you know, it just happens. Like, some nights there's like a ton of groin strikes. There's just like that kind of energy. This card, it was eye pokes. Salikov, I thought, was probably the worst poke of all of them. And this dude, like, No, I'm going to keep fighting. Not only did he keep fighting, Trinaldo's like, oh, I poked you in that eye? Well, let me throw a left straight at that eye. Let me throw a hook at that eye. Let me throw a high kick to that eye. He's like, I poked you in that fucking eye, and now I'm going to take advantage of it, and I'm going to try and punish you for wanting to continue fighting. So dirty, but so awesome. and he's like, yeah, I poked you in that fucking eye, and I'm gonna hit you on that side of your head every opportunity I can. But even more awesome that Salikov was able to continue fighting and pull off the victory, because, you know, a lot of times you try and force yourself, you know, after being fouled like that. And his eye was bad, man. It was like, all, it looked like it was bleeding from the inside, like internal bleeding of the eyeball or something. I'm not a doctor, Jeff. But yeah, Salikov getting the unanimous decision there. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, dude. And it's funny because I had the commentary going, and the commentary. So the eye poke happened in the third round. So if they'd stopped the fight, they still would have scored it because of the first two rounds. And to me personally, I think Salikov, was winning the fight pretty handily. And after the eye poke, the commentary team mentioned how Trinaldo, came alive and you know, was unloading on Salikov here. And be out loud, I was like, well, that's what happens when you eye poke somebody and they don't see your punches coming. It was fun to see that little fire from Trinaldo. But man, Bill, he looked 1,000 years old, man.
Yeah, I think he knew, like, oh man, I better start swinging at this guy's bad eye, because otherwise I'm going to lose this fight. Yeah. he was so obvious about it. It was like, hook, high kick.
Yeah, for sure.
So that one was good. I enjoyed the Camuela Kirk Makwan Mirakani fight. That fight was good. There were some great scrambles in there. And also, sorry, Mark, we're not gonna restart the show. But the beautiful thing about the show is that it's on the internet forever, so you can just go back to the beginning, or just, you know, listen along with us now, and then start it over later. Do it like I did with this card last night. I watched the last three fights and then I watched the rest of them. Yeah, the Kirk Amerikani fight was so good, man. It was so close, and it was like, you know, you could kind of tell the judges were scoring like the latter parts of the round more. You know, Kirk would be like finishing the round on top, and like he would get the round, and it was close. I mean, this was a last minute fight for both guys. Camilo Kirk fought 3 weeks ago, I think it was, in CFA or LFA or one of those FAs. You know, took this on short notice. Of course, he was on the Contender Series, lost to our buddy Billy Quarantillo. But looked really tough in that fight, and you know, stayed in shape, stayed active, coming off two knockout wins in a row. Answered the phone, gets in there with Amerikani, who I believe was ranked in the top 15, pulls an upset victory. You know, say what you want about the decision, that it's a decision win on paper, and now, you know, he's positioned himself for a big fight in the UFC. So give me your thoughts, Jeff.
Yeah, man, really impressed with Camilo Kirk. And Mukwan Amerikani, he looked good in there. You know, he didn't do too many things wrong. I felt like, you know, he was the one who initiated the grappling, which was awesome. But, Bill, I think that part of the scoring, and I like seeing this, is that Camilo Kirk was active off of his back, and I think that the judges saw that. I think that they saw that he was more active from the bottom than Amerikani was from the top. I mean, I believe it was the second or third round, he had that triangle on Amerikani. It almost looked like he was going to finish an armbar from that position.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I was just so impressed with Kirk. And Amerikani, you know, it looked like he got caught a few times. It felt like for that armbar, if Kirk had adjusted maybe his hips or, opened up the triangle and gotten the foot over the face, I felt like you would have finished that armbar, man. And I think the judges took some of that into consideration, which I'm really excited about. It's about time.
Yeah, and those grappling exchanges were so good. And it was great offense by Kirk. I think he did a lot of things right. It's just that Amerikani is so tough and so experienced. I just think he needs to grow the beard back. I think he maybe would have gotten the decision if he had the beard. He just looked like, you know, he looked like too young to be in there, I think. So the judges were like, let me give it to the guy with the beard.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, because I was trying to think, like, Amerikani looks so different. Why does he look like a little kid?
Yeah. And it's not just the beard. It looked like he had, like, facial reconstructive surgery. Like, he looked like a different person. Maybe it wasn't even Makwan Amerikani. Maybe we've all been fooled. We've been duped.
Yeah. You know who else went through that was the axe murderer, Vanderlei Silva. I don't know if you remember when they fixed his nose, he came back like a different person.
Yeah. Yeah, like way different. It was creepy. It looks like a horror movie mask. But for the sake of time, Jeff, because I gotta run out the door in like 10 minutes ago. I want to go real quick into Alon Patrick and Mason Jones, and then I'll run through the rest of the card. Tell me what pops out to you. But Mason Jones just beating the shit out of Alon Patrick for 7 minutes and 14 seconds. Then accidental eye poke. If it had happened like 16 seconds later, they would have gone to a decision, and it would have been like, the first round was a 10-8 for Mason Jones, probably. In the second round, if you scored, it would have been a 10-9. Obviously, it was an accident, Jeff. I mean, he's beating the shit out of the guy. He didn't need to poke him in the eye. I don't know how bad it was for Patrick. Like I said, it looked like Salikov's was worse, but, you know, looks don't mean everything. You don't know what a guy's feeling at the time. I've been like grazed in the eye and it didn't leave a mark at all. And I was like, oh fuck, I'm not training anymore today. So I'm not going to be the one to say like, oh, he was faking it and he could have continued, but he didn't. Like if he said he couldn't see, like probably couldn't see, and you know, we'll take him at his word for that, give him the benefit of the doubt, but it just sucks because it was bad timing. Like Mason Jones putting on a career defining performance here, beating on a really tough guy in Alon Patrick. And then, you know, pokes him in the eye. And if it had happened 16 seconds later, he would have won the fight. But, you know, it's just a shitty roll of the dice for Jones there. Fiorot, which this was like a physical mismatch, knocking out Tabitha Ricci. This was like uncomfortable to watch, like how disproportionate these two women were in size. But in any case, great knockout for Fiorot. Sean Woodson, split decision win over Yousef Zalal. Mixed opinions about the judging of that one. A split decision is fine with me. I think, you know, both guys had their moments in the fight. I think Zalal mixed it up a little bit more, but Woodson landed more. And then we had Claudio Puelles, who was just all over Jordan Leavitt and wouldn't let him get off any of those unorthodox techniques, and just kind of smothered him there for the unanimous decision. What's jumping out to you, Jeff? What's making your tongue itch over there?
Bill, I like the Patrick versus Jones fight. Definitely want to go back and watch that because I missed that one. And the Woodson versus Zalal fight, because Bill, I always love a good split decision with a little controversy. So that's right up my alley.
For sure. For sure. All right. So great card. We'll put a bow on that one. And then we'll take a quick look at UFC 263 coming up next week. Unfortunately, we won't have a lot of time to do a full breakdown on this one, which is unfortunate because it's such a stacked card. But I have to start with my sleeper pick right off the bat, Jeff. And I have to go with my boy, Matt, the Steamroller Frivola, friend of mine, friend of the show, one of the favorite guests, one of the most entertaining fighters in the UFC. And I'm just saying that because, you know, he happens to be a buddy and I've trained with him. You know, he's had some great, memorable performances getting in there against Frank Camacho. This fight was supposed to happen last year at some point, and things got mixed up. You know, Frivola had, I think, 3 or 4 fights canceled on him in 2020. It was just like a string of bad luck. Camacho was one of those, and he went on to get knocked out by the replacement. I forget who it was. And Frivola also coming off a loss against Armand Saryukian, which was a last-minute replacement that he had to deal with. So both of these guys, they were supposed to fight at one point. Now they're both coming off of losses. And they're going to put on a show. There's no way they're not. You know, Frank Camacho has a very similar style. He's a come forward style. He wants to go for a finish, and you know, Steamroll is the same way. He keeps steamrolling forward until, you know, somebody drops, and he will not stop. And like, you gotta put his lights off to get him out of the fight. And Camacho's a similar mindset. So that's why that fight is guaranteed to be fireworks, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even know Matt Frivola was on the card. So now I'm really excited for this. The prelims are going to be awesome, Bill. Top to bottom, this card looks fantastic. And Bill, since we don't have time to go through all of these fights, I'll give you my sleeper fight. I think it's going to be Lauren Murphy versus Joanne Calderwood. Joanne Calderwood, she's been a little hot and cold lately. And Lauren Murphy, I think, is going to want to springboard off of Joanne Calderwood and see if she can put her name in some of the top rankings of this women's flyweight division. So I think that fight's going to really be exciting. You know, we've talked about how Valentina Shevchenko, there are no contenders. So I think that this is a chance for both of these ladies to get a spectacular performance and put their names in that title conversation.
For sure. And that's a great pick, Jeff. I think that's going to be a really fun fight. Another one that's kind of quietly made its way onto this card, Damian Maia and Bilal Muhammad. I think that's going to be a really fun fight. Not a lot of people talking about Drew Dober getting back on the horse pretty quickly after that loss. Who did he lose to, Jeff? Or the Dagestani wrestler? Islam Makhachev.
Yep. You're right.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back from that. Of course, the co-main and main events, rematches, both of them closely contested fights the first time. Israel Adesanya and Marvin Vettori had like a weird press conference where they're both in hotels, like in their pajamas and like, but like fancy pajamas. And it was weird. It was very uncomfortable. But I'm here for it. I think it was a close fight the first time around. They've both grown a lot. Obviously, one of them has become the champion of the world. So I think it's a fun fight. Figueiredo and Moreno, obviously, that fight was awesome. If there weren't the point deduction in the first fight, you know, Figueiredo would have probably won. I don't remember exactly the circumstances, but they wound up going to a draw their first fight, correct?
It might have been a groin shot or something.
Yeah, there was something funny went on there. I remember it was a great fight. And I'm just rushing right now, so I'm not really taking the time to think about it. And of course, Leon Edwards, Nate Diaz. I do not believe Nate Diaz is fighting until the cage door is locked and, you know, the referee is saying, like, let's go. I'm not going to get my hopes up for it, but, you know, I can't wait to see it if it does happen.
Yeah, for sure. And for some reason, that fight is going to be 5 rounds. I don't know why. Hopefully, if it does happen, hopefully Diaz gets a good check, because I wouldn't fight anybody for 5 rounds if it wasn't a main event or a title fight. But Bill, really quick, before you got to get going, let me ask you, if one title has to change hands, which title changes hands on Saturday?
Let's see. That's a tough one. I'm going to say the middleweight title. I feel like Vittori has a lot of momentum behind him. I think, you know, Adesanya was really frustrated and is, you know, he's the champ and he's coming off a loss. So he doesn't have a whole lot of confidence because he faced Blachowicz for the light heavyweight title. But I think it's going to be a great fight. I think it's going to be, you know, really close. I think it's going to be, there's a lot of bad blood there, which always makes it fun. And what would you pick?
I actually think Moreno is going to beat Figueiredo on Saturday. Don't put any money on it, because you if just don't do it. Don't place your bets.
Yeah, ditto.
But I just think that Moreno, I think he found a new side of himself against Figueiredo the first time. I think he learned he can roll with this guy. He can go into the deep waters with this guy and fight toe to toe with him. So, he's just a tough dude, man. And he loves to fight. So there's something about Moreno, and in the interviews, you can hear it when he talks. He's got this calm confidence, and I like it. And to me, it's a little scary, actually, how calm he is. But also, no, Mark, no. Don't bet your house on Moreno. But I feel good about him. I think that if one title changes hands, it's the flyweight title.
All right. Well, I guess we'll find out next Saturday. This is going to be a really fun card. The rush is that I have a dinner reservation that I'm probably going to be late for, because not only am I doing a show, but I have a toddler to get ready to get out the door. And as far as drinks, bad news for the audience. I am taking the month of June off from alcohol, just as like a personal kind of cleansing thing. Trying to drop a few extra pounds, and the booze definitely don't help. Especially if I make some poor food choices while I'm drinking. And I think it's just important to take a break every now and then. I definitely don't encourage drinking to excess and or like drinking till you get sick and drinking till you have problems and things like that. So giving myself a little break. I will definitely pour myself a drink on Father's Day, though. That's the one exception I granted myself. But, you know, just kind of giving the old organs a break from filtering through so much. And Mark says they do dry July in Australia, which I like the sound of that. But here's the real reason I'm not drinking this month, Jeff, is next month I'm going on vacation with my in-laws. And I am going to punish my liver and kidneys on that trip. Like, so I think it's important to take a little breather for the month of June. So that's what I'm doing. I hate to rush through this, but I do got to jump out of here before, the wife breaks down the door and, puts me in a chokehold and drags me in the car. If you guys want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, you can do so through our friends at Team Reaper. I will put the link in the show notes, as always, for your t-shirts, hoodies, and tank tops. You can also grab some other great MMA gear from them. You can use the promo code MMARocks10. Save yourself 10% off. If you guys want to get a hold of Jeff, it's at @animal_Wilson, Twitter and Instagram. You guys know how to get a hold of me. It's at MMA on the Rocks everywhere on social media. And for some reason, my phone is exploding right now from the guys from the gym group text. So something's going on. I'm in a panic. I don't have alcohol to cope with my feelings. So I'm just going to turn the internet off so you guys don't see me have an emotional breakdown. Not that that would actually happen, but I am in a hurry. So thanks for tuning in. Please share the show. Leave your comments. Leave your reviews. Leave your feedback. Leave your criticism, especially if it's of me not drinking this month. I can take the jokes. I have thick skin. Until next time. Cheers, everybody. Goodbye.